Hello, and welcome to IRI Growth Insights, featuring IRI thought leaders, industry partners, and guests. For more than 40 years, IRI has been known for its invaluable data, but these podcasts delve into the insights the data reveal to fuel market disruption and market growth for those in the CPG, retail, healthcare, and media markets. I'm your host, Joan Driggs, coming to you from IRI's corporate headquarters in Chicago. Today, I'm joined by Jenna Parker, Principal IRI Fresh Center of Excellence. She's been unlocking the power of big data as it relates to growing the fresh food industry for many years. I most admire Jenna for looking across the total store and approaching challenges from the consumer's point of view. She really understands the shopper's journey and has a passion for fresh. She brings that winning combination of data and insight. Jenna works across both IRI's retail and manufacturer clients, providing fresh ideas and insights on how we can ignite growth. She lives in Phoenix with two other consumers, her 13-year-old and 9-year-old kids, and she enjoys travel, especially when it includes store visits. I'm sure your kids love those store visits too. Thanks for joining me, Jenna.
Thanks, Joan. It's great to be here.
Yeah. What we're going to be talking about today is really part of a much bigger project, the Fresh Trends series that you've been working on, that you first introduced at our Growth Summit earlier this year in Denver. So let's talk a little bit about some of those key consumer groups that really impact what's happening in Fresh.
Yes, it's this year with Fresh Trends, we wanted to go beyond isolated trends like convenience or health and get to the heart of why is it that we're seeing fresh have a growth slowdown. So what we've been tracking at IRI is since 2017, center store continues to grow at about a 2-3% overall growth rate.
Higher than a lot of what's happening in the store, right?
True. And there are certain categories like frozen that are 5% year over year. Fresh had been earlier in the decade at about 10% to 8% growth. But now as we got into the back half of this decade, we've seen those growth rates slow down. So this didn't feel like in our fourth year of doing Fresh Trends, it was the right thing to do to just talk about individual trends. But we said instead is we wanted to give unlock opportunities for fresh industry as well as retailers in any industry to really identify how to bring that growth back. And so we called it the pendulum series. How do we swing growth back toward a more positive direction? And we found the key to doing that was consumers, specific consumer groups.
Okay. Let's talk about, I think we mentioned that there's really three key groups. So let's define who those groups are and then we'll kind of dig into what each of them have to offer.
Sure. What we did to find the groups, first off, is we took a look at the deepest and lowest level of our data, which we call the mosaic cluster. So this wasn't some mega group like African Americans or lower income households. We really wanted to get to a very finite and personified household that we could target in our media, in our marketing, in our stores. So we did an analysis that combined how they shop for fresh, how they shop for center store, what their population projection was going to be in the future, because we know we're changing as a society. And we mixed a lot of different factors together in this kind of soup or this puzzle piece to come out with the most important and highest opportunity consumers. And what we found was that three groups represent a $5 billion opportunity for the retail industry.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yep. Who wouldn't want a bite of that, right?
And that they're very, very achievable, but they don't look the way they look like us. They look like households, not just like back in the earlier parts of the decade where we talked about Hispanic consumers and some homogeneous group. We really wanted these to be specific and actionable. So let's talk about one of the groups because I think it really shows how different these are, that not only was our research different mixing all these things together, but the types of household that we found was also different.
Okay.
So one of the groups that I think is the most fascinating and surprising to people is the consumer household group we found that is growing the most in their fresh spending at 8-9% is actually a group of households that are characterized as lower income, urban, small families. So we're talking these might be one single parent and a couple of children. They might be a 20-something living with an older person. So they're multi-generational, but They're typically a smaller household with only one head of household income. So they do have that fixed income perspective.
Now, what's driving the newer or the growing interest in Fresh? Is it accessibility? Is it awareness? What are some of the things that are driving that growth?
So I think one of the things that's interesting about that group is they've been overlooked. There's this theory, I think, by a lot of us marketers that if you're on a fixed or finite income and trying to feed multiple mouths, you would buy cheaper food than not. And what we found by looking at grocery stores is these households are growing their fresh spend and they're using grocery stores as their primary place to buy fresh foods. We also found that they're more likely to drive out of their way for high quality fresh. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of talk about smaller footprints and going into urban food deserts. And I think accessibility is a part of that. We also found this group is worth talking about because, again, fresh that they're buying at grocery stores, but they might be buying center store food at club, discount, limited assortment, where those foods are rather, you can buy carbonated soft drinks anywhere, you can buy salty snacks anywhere, typically with the same brands. But fresh foods are primarily at grocery stores.
Right.
So what I really love to talk about with this group, again, is the surprising fact that they are increasing their fresh spend, especially at supermarkets. But how do we use that insight of what they're buying in fresh to connect to the other parts of the store? Because if you're a grocery retailer, you want to not just capture that produce spend. Like we found that they're actually buying a lot of fresh produce and there's specific fresh produce items. There's also fresh pork in the meat case, fresh seafood. They're over-indexing and more likely to buy these products at a grocery store. But in any store, they're actually also much more likely to buy canned vegetables, shelf-stable drinks, and carbonated soft drinks. But what was happening is the retailer would capture the pork or the produce basket, but then they'd probably lose the carbonated soft drink sale to another retailer. What we proposed at Summit was, now that we know that these households buy these on separate trips, why aren't we using the fresh pork or the fresh seafood anchor to drive the people to the stores and then incent them to buy another category, like in center store, right, to up that basket ring?
I think it's interesting because you're absolutely right. And I think there has been a certain mindset for a lot of consumers too, that the way they're paying for some of these products, it might be a food assistance program, mm-hmm. is not readily accepted or available at all the different stores or at the stores where the fresh is or where they want to shop, frankly, for the best prices. And I think that that's changing. We've seen a lot of information come across where SNAP benefits are now available at a lot of click and collect places. Like Walmart has really been driving that. Thank you, Walmart. You can actually even use benefits at like a farmer's market, which are now not just produce. It's really very much like the French market type of scenario.
Bakery, meat.
Yes, exactly.
At markets now.
So I think that it is a matter of retailers kind of like climbing on board with some of this. It's not just being aware of what they're losing in the basket of going to another market, but it's like, how can you make shopping your store easier and more comfortable for those shoppers?
One of the other surprising facts to that point is this concept of a beautiful fresh section and convenient meals, especially in a 2 or 3 person household or a mom or a dad and their children. This is actually a group who is buying meal kits, buying prepared meals, buying refrigerated dinners and entrees. So again, in theory, they're not just buying the cheapest foods.
Nope.
They are literally looking for the same experiences that upper income households are looking for.
Everybody wants convenience. Everyone wants to do the right thing in the easiest way possible. And I actually was doing a little desk research. There's a lot of meal kits. Now, again, not necessarily in store, but we know retailers have the capability, they have the expertise, or they're gaining it. But there's offerings from like Dinnerly or Every Plate that have servings for like $5 or below.
Yes.
So it is possible. And retailers, again, they don't have to worry as much about the distribution. They could notch it down even a little bit more.
Well, that concept of the meal kit, and this will help us transition to talk about the other two groups, meal kits solve a consumer need, which is people want to cook fresh. They want to cook at home. There's a health perception with that. There's a convenience perception. But we don't always are Betty Crocker. Mm-hmm. Everybody laughed during the last recession because there was this thought that fresh prepared foods would just die when our incomes were more strapped. When the opposite was true, people stopped going out to eat to save money and wanted to cook at home.
Right.
We didn't suddenly learn how to be, you know, a gourmet chef, even though we were watching Food Network. So meal kits, I think, sprung up from this need, both in the subscription and the in-store, mm-hmm. to want to cook and have that experience. But ultimately, consumers shop to make a meal. And this goes back to that concept about using items like fresh pork that we know the lower income, small household buy. But then we also know they buy other things with it. And retailers today, there's so much more they could do than just put it all in the same box. It'd be so simple for a retailer to offer a price incentive if you buy fresh pork to then also get a price discount on soda, to also get a price discount on other ingredients to make the meal, not have to put them in the same box.
No, I agree. It is about solutions, and it's about reminding consumers and being their advocate all throughout the store. It doesn't all have to be in the fresh or perimeter. It's everywhere.
It doesn't even have to be recipe-based. In our next installment of this series, we'll be looking at these three consumer groups. We'll talk about the next two in a second and give some examples of this. But this concept of solutions, not silos. Today at most retail stores, departments are incented to plus up their department.
Right.
And it's really only the store manager or the VP of grocery or the VP of perishables who looks across departments and looking at total foot traffic or total sales growth at the store. But a consumer, and the key to growth is going to be to capture as much of that total basket as possible. And the benefit we have at IRI, you talked earlier in our intro about the plethora of data assets that we have. In this era of big data, yes, we have sales, and yes, we have consumer panel data, but we have deep millions and millions of transaction level frequent shopper card data. What that's let us do is the analysis I was just mentioning, we're able to get to the most granular time of day, day of week, what's bought together mm-hmm. by exactly what type of traceable household. And that level of specificity has never been seen before in all of time. And if they were, it was one retailer, like a Kroger, being able to mine their own data, but then being blind to what happens at other stores, or if they were to offer a different assortment mix or a different promotion type. We now have 65 million blended frequent shopper cards. So we don't just see what's distributed at one retailer or one store or one store format. We blend all that together to truly observe what happens at supermarkets. And it's been really fun. That's the main data set we've primed with this. And so it not only helped us identify those households, but it let us get super specific as to what was in their basket mm-hmm. when they buy a certain item. And a lot of times it wasn't always necessarily intuitive, right? You would think it would be about a recipe. One of the insights we found is actually with a different consumer group. One of the other opportunity consumer groups is worth about $1 billion of opportunity is what we call multi-generational upper income households. So again, multi-generational in the respect that this is millennials living with boomers. These are Gen Zs who are just coming out of college, moving back in with mom and dad. Or these are Gen X parents with their kids having boomer or senior mom and dads live with them. But I know I live in Phoenix and there's been a housing boom with these kinds of adjacent houses where the grandparents live adjacent to the main family, or the millennial kids are still living at home and you need multiple master bedrooms. And these, so the housing market has really figured this out. But now at retail and grocery, we've seen some fascinating things about those types of households.
I'm one of them, actually. It is funny that you say that. Our daughter is a Gen Zer and just moved back after being away for a year. And it is completely upending the way my husband and I thought we were going about our life. And you're absolutely right. It's different eating habits. I'm laughing inside because I took my daughter to the store to stock up before I was headed out of town, and it looked like a reverse basket. You know, it would have been like what I would have instructed her to eat as a 4-year-old. And there was, you know, any cookies in there were for her dad. They weren't for her. So it's really interesting the way things are changing and what our ideas of solutions are. It's still very solutions based, mm-hmm. Lunches, dinners, you know, entertaining, but it's completely doing a 180 on us.
It is, you know, only the stat I saw was only 28% of U.S. households are two parents and two mm-hmm. and children
right,
school age or 18 and younger children, only 28%. Yet as marketers, we so often still think about that's our target consumer. Mom, shopping with two kids, making dinner for dad. And that is so not the society we live in today. And these households, like you described, are a great example of that because their baskets are big. Mm-hmm. Some of the biggest average basket rings in the store, not even just on each transaction, cumulatively, the amount of household income spent on food and groceries is much higher because you have multiple adult mouths to feed, each with their own unique idea of how to solve that meal.
Yep.
So one of the things I found most fascinating is that we saw these households are having a big impact in a category like meat alternatives. Meat alternatives would be things like plant-based or soy-based meat-type burgers and chops, that kind of meat-free but meat-type meat alternative. And what we found was actually the highest correlation in these households when they bought those fresh meat alternatives, they actually also bought pork and chicken in that same trip.
Oh, I believe that for sure.
But you wouldn't have thought of that if we were sitting in a, you know, a marketing conference room of one of those companies that's marketing those, you know, non-meat alternative burgers. We'd be thinking about how do we put in some vegan cheese and how do we get produce connected here? And yet what we found was the consumers of that are also the meat eaters in the home.
Sure.
And a meat department could mm-hmm. incent them to not just buy the plant-based, but also buy other meats and give them this kind of multi-meat loading basket. Because clearly based on the types of other burgers and chicken breasts they were buying, they were about to grill.
And you know what? Similarly, dairy is the same way. You know, we buy both dairy and non-dairy products. Right. And it's not just because one person in the household might not be a meat eater. We're all meat eaters, but we're just trying to change our eating habits.
Yeah. The flexitarian lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And there is, and I'd recommend this for, I'm sure it'll be a podcast coming up, but my counterpart, John Crawford, in our dairy group did a fascinating plant-based study this year also at Summit.
I'll make a note of getting John on
and
here.
I'll plug John. So plug me again if I show up on this again. But where I'm going with this is that plant-based phenomenon, this flexitarian lifestyle, the subbing in different meals based on health is very much synonymous with a lot of upper income, even middle income and low income households, but it's especially in this multi-generational. Boomers, we know, are making different choices as they age and looking for more healthful options, mm-hmm. but they're often much more interested in functional foods. And we see that in their baskets. Then you've got millennials who also are making more healthful choices. They're often looking for things that make them feel good about themselves. Like you bring up the cookies example. A boomer might have a treat that's maybe a sugar-free cookie or a lower-in-fat cookie, whereas a millennial look for a power bar, mm-hmm. right? This is protein-laden, and it's designed with these benefits and very benefit-forward marketing. Both of those items are now very important, just as health and convenience are important.
You know, you bring up an interesting point because Larry Levin and I worked on new product pace setters, and one of the overarching trends this year was indulgence. But to me, it was very manageable, controlled indulgence, small bites. But you're right, absolutely top of the line, interesting things. We're eating it, just not in great quantities.
Great quantities, which was why the 100-calorie phenomenon happened earlier in the decade, but I look at it as permissible indulgence. Mm-hmm. I know Sally will talk about this in confection, Sally Lyons Wyatt. What we see, and that's a great transition to another big trend that we're seeing that fits with these multi-generational upper-income households, is the charcuterie trend.
Oh, sure.
This mm-hmm. concept of I'm maybe going to a dinner party, but instead of serving a large meal, I'll put out a high-end dried cured Italian meat plate, some cheeses, some nuts, and while we have our wine or our beer, we'll snack. And so now we've had this really high end, this is much better than putting out a plate of bologna mm-hmm. or, you know, just any old cheese. They're really looking for, and we see this very strongly in our recent deli webinar we had last week. These are extremely high end types of products that people are buying. And it's very much synonymous with millennials and baby boomers
right.
who are having more of these smaller meals and charcuterie, whether it be a single snack. We see a lot of snack packs. We also see a lot of these kind of curate your own platter type.
Right. The entertainment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of packaged items out there that have just kind of cropped up over the past 5 years or so that really serve that. You know, the pre-sliced and stuff, instead of going to the deli or going to a higher end store to get that stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's convenience. You know, it's funny because we had an insight when I first started playing with frequent shopper card data in a blended way several several years ago. One of the insights we found was that it's actually a millennial consumer that was buying Lunchables. And that kind of trend is how these snack packs. So the last group I want to talk about as it relates to indulgence is, I don't want to miss the three. Mm-hmm. So the third group is a traditional family household, but it's a middle class ethnic household, typically first generation Americans with their children, very heavily present in the South and the Southeast, especially with a Hispanic descent. Mm-hmm. But again, it's a traditional family, but not what we maybe thought of in the 80s, 90s, or 2000s. They are kind of first generation. My favorite fun fact about them does have to do with indulgence and convenience, to just wrap up with, to bring those trends home. We found that the number one week and truly the number one day for these types of households, who are expected to grow $2 billion in food the next 5 years or 3 years, their number one day or week wasn't Thanksgiving. It wasn't Christmas. It wasn't even Easter. It was Mother's Day, the Saturday before Mother's Day.
Aww.
And when we looked at their basket, it clearly was, to me at least, Dad going to the store going, how do we make breakfast in bed for Mom? We saw lots of fresh bakery. We saw lots of breakfast meats. We saw fresh orange juice. And we saw that they were consciously making choices to buy the more premium options of those categories. And yet, as Sally and I, as we did this research and brainstormed it, we couldn't think of a retailer that was even having a Mother's Day promotion that incented someone to cross by those categories. Yet, Dad is desperately seeking a solution and cherry picking across the store just based on what he thinks he should serve Mom. Why aren't we knowing what we know all guys need and need some kind of incentive? You don't have to put it all in the same basket. You don't have to put it in the same box, but come in and say, hey, Dad, we'll have coloring for the kids over here. And by the way, if you buy these 15 items between produce, meat, deli, bakery, center store for breakfast in bed and Mom event, we'll give you $5 off your total ring.
Sure. Well, you know what? You just handed out a perfectly fabulous opportunity for a retailer to pick up on or manufacturers to come together and bundle. But think about it in terms of even how Thanksgiving is treated now in the store. You can go in and you can buy a fresh catered meal packaged and ready to go, or you can get any level of like convenience on the way in, or the completely raw ingredients. I mean, we've mastered Thanksgiving. So maybe Mother's Day is the next great holiday to master in terms of serving those customers.
And you say that, but I will still say, as we're sitting here in September and there's still time for the Thanksgiving holiday, we saw last year that majority of retailers still were traditionally promoting Thanksgiving turkeys and just offering a discount on the turkey. And sure enough, what we saw in our data was that one retailer might pick up the turkey ring, and some of the low price folks got the turkey ring, but they were losing and leaking other Thanksgiving items to other stores. And we also know as society, we're not having as big of Thanksgivings and we're not buying our Thanksgiving foods as early. So we're also promoting on the wrong week to the wrong people in the wrong size birds. And so we've been doing research, actually, and I'm very excited about Thanksgiving this year because we've worked with a lot of our manufacturers and retailers to give them some new testing ideas, not even just about bundling products together, but promoting when people want to buy and what size turkeys to buy this year. So it'll be interesting to see if this year's Thanksgiving is a little different. I know only have a couple retailers being a little radical in trying those, but we feel very strongly they're going to be successful.
Excellent. Oh, wonderful. Well, Jana, thank you so much. You can actually visit IRIWorldwide.com and look up the webcast that Jana's referring to, the store size pendulum, and you can look under it under webcasts in our insights bucket. So,
a quick plug, we have our next one October 24th, Fresh Trends Crossing the Store Aisle Pendulum. So look for a lot more of these solution, not silo ideas then.
Great. Thank you. So thank you for listening. Please become a subscriber and let us know what you want to learn more about. We'll serve it up on a future IRI Growth Insights episode. Look for us wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to review IRI Growth Insights. Also, visit us on the web at IRIWorldwide.com and connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.